Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect, presented by Bosque Home Services. Carlos and his team provide heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. For service, call 444-7200. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. So thankful to have our friend Brian Cochran in studio today for the whole hour. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, my pleasure to be here.
And you are running around like a chicken with your head cut off, as my parents used to tell me. And I want you to start the show by telling us about the changes, John Moore Associates.
Yeah, so very excited to announce that on March 31st, we completed what has been a seven, almost eight-year-long continuity plan. And I am now the sole shareholder of our firm, which is a wonderful privilege for me. And we feel that everything is owned by God, so we're all stewards, but I feel an extra stewardship role taking over from our founder and my mentor, John Moore, who did a fabulous job building this firm. And I'm very fortunate he's going to stick around for a while and continue to serve clients, be part of our team, and support me in my new role as president of the firm.
Really exciting. And you have offices now in Phoenix and in Albuquerque.
Yep, yep. And I've sort of loosely planted the flag in the Northwest with starting a presence just north of Portland, Oregon, in the Southwest Washington area, which is where I was born and raised. And things are going really well. We're starting to bring the truth of biblical finance to that part of the country as well.
I love the fact that you call it biblical finance and biblical stewardship of money, because you have a lot of clients that are not people that believe in Jesus, but they believe in what you're doing because the principles work.
Exactly. And that's what's so important, really, with all of the principles that we learn in Scripture, but certainly in my world where we deal with money, we see that that's the way it works. You know, if you follow God's principles for how you steward the assets that He entrusts to you and your family, it works. And you experience more joy, more contentment, less stress, and more opportunities to take care of your family and take care of those in the community around you.
When I was growing up, I was not a great student. So if an assignment was assigned by a teacher on Monday, due Friday, Thursday night, I was up all night doing that assignment. And I have to liken that to what you teach us about investing. You've got to make a plan now, and you need to get it done, get your homework done, and then you have that peace and that contentment and a lot less worry when you get things planned and ready to go.
Yep. And we define financial planning as the predetermined allocation of resources. Mm. We actually call it the continuous predetermined allocation. So on an ongoing basis, you're deciding where will the next dollar go. And so often with our personal finances, we're like, you know, fifth grade Jim Williams getting his project done, you know, the day before the project is due. But when we can predetermine what we're going to do, we can trust principles and wisdom rather than just panic and make decisions largely based on emotion. And what we see is in the absence of a good financial plan, people tend to make decisions based, financial decisions based purely on emotion. And that can lead us astray.
And if you have no plan, or you have constantly, if you're managing by emergency, that stress has just got to be off the chart.
Oh, absolutely. And it stresses individuals. Where we really see that stress show up is in relationships. Husbands and wives fighting about money under stress. Siblings arguing about money as they care for their family members. I actually just came from a meeting with someone who's done this extremely well, a very successful case of a fabulous pair of sisters that have been taking care of their mother for many years and stewarding her assets as trustees. And as their mother's health declined, they were always in agreement. They were always strong communicators. I got to serve really just as a facilitator in helping them make wise decisions with investments and tax planning. And, you know, mom passed away a few months ago. And everything has moved so smoothly because, first off, they had a plan. Secondly, they surrounded themselves with good advisors, myself, a good tax advisor, a fabulous estate attorney, really a great circle of wise counselors. And then they just loved on each other. They didn't treat it as my money or even mom's money. They really see that eternal perspective that it's God's money. And they were just helping mom be a steward until the end of her time here on earth. And now, as this client said today, her mom's dancing with Jesus now. And it's really neat when you can honor your parents that way. But we can honor ourselves and our husbands and wives the same way when we follow those same principles and treat money properly.
Brian, that's a great segue into what we're talking about today. We want to talk about people that have lost a spouse, and you even do some work specifically with widows. At least it's my idea that you do that, because many times there are women, especially older women today, where the traditional roles in the family were that they were managing the home and the husbands were working. Now, that obviously has changed a lot.
Sure.
Over time. But I'll just ask you the question, what happens generally to most of us and our financial plan when we lose a spouse?
Yeah. So first, a couple key statistics. I think they were surprising to me when I heard some of these numbers. 80% of all wives will be widows. Mm. So if you're listening to this right now and you're in a thriving marriage, and that's wonderful, but you know, there's an 80% chance that you will be a widow. So there's a lot of widows among us, and at different stages of losing a spouse. Maybe it's really recent and fresh. Maybe it's been 20 years. Probably the number that shocked me the most was that the average age of a widow is only 55.
Wow, that's really young.
So I think when we think widow, we think of this sweet old church lady, you know, that we see every Sunday, who may have lost her husband a few years ago. But I can attest, in our practice, we serve several widows who lost their husbands in their 30s and 40s. And so the average age of a widow, only 55. What that means is they have a long road ahead of them, possibly as a single woman, making the financial decisions and family decisions on her own. So some of the principles we'll talk about today, as you're thinking about this, think beyond the 75 or 80-year-old widow, and think about those 55, 60, 65-year-old widows that may have 30 or 40 years ahead of them, living on their own, managing finances, and, you know, going from, you know, we talk about when someone's married, they go from me to we, they had to reverse that and focus on their own needs. So, you know, I think it's just such an important thing. And, you know, scripture is very clear that we're called to care for widows and orphans. And I think as financial advisors who follow scripture, we feel very called to care for this group, and we've had the good fortune of working with some really fabulous women. Sometimes they lost a spouse that we also served. We were serving the couple, and then the husband passed away, but we also get many referrals of widows, because we serve a lot of widows. They know other women who've lost husbands, and then also a lot of our centers of influence, people like attorneys and CPAs, they entrust the widows they serve to us because they know we'll care for them properly. So that's a lot of, you know, ground rule stuff, but it's some good context, I think, as we go into this conversation, because we all know widows who need our love and care.
Well, and I want our listeners, I mean, we have a lot of women that listen to the show, and I can only imagine that there are women right now from high school age on up to the 55-year-olds that you've been just addressing that need to realize that if this data is correct, live your dream. Get married, have a great relationship, but you need to make a plan, and that's what Brian's going to encourage you to do today.
Yep. And the first thing I thought we'd talk about is probably the most common thing I see with widows is they feel really pressured to make big decisions immediately. So if you're a new widow, or if you know someone's a new widow, you may have experienced or seen this, where the husband passes away, and after 40 or 50 years of marriage, all of a sudden you go into panic mode and think that everything needs to change now. So there's an internal drive, and I can't explain where that comes from. You could probably have someone, a psychologist or someone, come on and explain why this happens. But I've seen this so many times in our meeting that they want to do something now. And certainly there's plenty to do. You lose your spouse, there's paperwork to be done, there's documents that need attention, there's action to take. But this drive to stay busy and do a lot, it is really incredible. And some of that's internal. Sometimes we see it externally by well-meaning people in their lives, friends, children, very commonly, start putting pressure on that surviving spouse, that widow. You got to do this. You got to do that. Pretty rarely you got to do anything. You know, there's a few things you have to take care of, some legal matters and such, but there's very little you have to do in a rush. And even the most loving, well-intentioned family members can put pressure on a widow to panic and make decisions that she may later regret.
I'm thinking about an attitude that I've seen in some families. I think I told you that I was the trustee for a couple of friends that passed away. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening it was the most miserable experience of my life because these families were getting divided up after my friends passed away, their dads. Siblings in the family, the children of the family, were fighting over $1,000 or $2,000 and terminating relationships with their siblings that were lifelong, obviously. And that just broke my heart. The second one, at least I had a little bit more wisdom in that I set aside a big chunk of money. I think it was about 50 grand. And I told everybody involved in the process, look, Joe has come forward and said to me, this is what I want you to manage. This is what I want you to distribute. He's told me exactly how to do it. And if you want to fight about it, that's fine. Because what I'm going to refer you to is this attorney. And every dollar that that attorney is going to be paid is going to come out of this $50,000 that's already set aside, already defined. And that'll just reduce the amount of money that you get. And boy, that worked beautifully. But it still wasn't that spiritual loving blessing that you described.
Yep. Yep. And it's hard because often people, again, have the best intentions. They're not trying to take advantage of someone or take advantage of an estate in the case that you're talking about, or take advantage of their mother or sister or aunt who just lost their spouse. They really have the best intentions. But what I often see, it's these type A sons is what it's most common, that come in and want to take over the show. And I've got mom under, you know, I got things under control here. Mm. And all of a sudden, you know, us, you know, we've been advising these couples sometimes for decades. And all of a sudden the son comes in and sort of in a way blows the whole thing up and says, well, this is the way I would do it, and takes over. And sometimes in our cases, we lose relationships with those spouses because it's no longer a viable relationship that we can serve. But it, that also puts a lot of pressure on the parent, the mom, in this case, the widow, a lot of times, because if they have to say no, they're not saying no to me as an advisor or a salesman that's come by. They're saying no to their son or to their loving nephew. And it really is a tough situation. So there's internal pressure. There's external pressure from well-meaning people. And then third, there's external pressure from people who do not mean well, people who are there to take advantage of that that new widow. And that could be a family member, too. And it often is a family member. So there's the well-intentioned son, and then there's the not-so-well-intentioned sons and daughters.
Is it inappropriate to call those people predators?
I don't think that's inappropriate at all. You know, they're out for themselves, and they don't mind causing harm to that new widow. Sometimes it's the salesperson from it could be a financial person. We saw one woman get taken advantage of on a solar project on her house that was way overpriced, but she was very vulnerable at that point, thought it was a good idea, and was taken advantage of. It's a sensitive state that you're in as a new widow, and so you have to be on the lookout for those predators, as you put it.
Well, and I don't want to call anybody a predator, but I spent some time on Facebook because ABQ Connect has a Facebook page, and every single day we're getting people requesting us to like them that are so-called financial advisors, and I read the ads. And they're predatory. I don't know how else to say it, because they'll give you this scary edict that if you don't take action in the next 4 hours, you're going to lose everything. I mean, that's the kind of ad that you see every day. How do people have discernment about what's right? And I think this comes into hiring a qualified financial advisor.
Yep. And not just a financial advisor in the role that I serve, but maybe a team of professionals. And that's really important is, you know, as a, you know, if you were the financial person in your household, especially, so in a couple, there's usually a CFO of the household, a chief financial officer, and that could be the husband or the wife. But if you as a widow were not the CFO and all the financial aspects of your relationship are new to you and you're learning all this for the first time, which is a mistake in itself because a lot of husbands don't invite their wives into the financial picture soon enough. You know, you're already overwhelmed. Now you mix in this inexplainable urge to do something. And then someone comes along, well, you better do this now. I mean, you put all that together and it's a perfect recipe for big mistakes and potential costly mistakes. So yes, finding someone who has your best interest in mind is key. And we can talk more about how you find that person.
You bet. Brian Cochran is a certified financial planner, and he's just let us know at the beginning of the show that he's now the owner of John Moore Associates. And they sponsor programming here on KNKT. We're so blessed. They're part of the Kingdom Advisors Organization. They use biblical principles in investing. It's very helpful to go to johnmoore.com and look at their insights tab. And Brian posts blog posts. He posts our interviews frequently. He has all kinds of educational materials for people to really think about and challenge you to make a financial plan. We have a lot more to talk about today. When we come back, we're going to talk about what I'm going to call the hearts of our mothers to want to share assets after we lose a parent, and the moms sometimes want to give it all the way. So when we come back, Brian will talk to us about that. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
At Krecke Law, we believe in making things right when things go wrong. If you are injured, you shouldn't have to go it alone. You deserve someone who will listen to you and fight for you. We believe that you deserve to protect your future, protect your family, and protect your loved ones. We believe in challenging insurance companies and standing up to bullies. We believe that David can beat Goliath. 843-7777.
The Krecke Law Firm. Righting wrongs, protecting your future. TheKreckeLawFirm.com. The C-R-E-C-C-A Law Firm.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosky Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air. Call Bosky and we'll be.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8585.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. If you're tired of old-school gimmicks and games while shopping for a new car, then experience something new-school at Power Ford. We'll give you a better deal and a better experience. The better deal part? We'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. The better experience part? You rated us Best of the City and Ford Dealer of the Year. Find your ride at MyPowerFord.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Be sure and call Indigo Mortgage for a quote when you're shopping for your next mortgage loan. The team at Indigo Mortgage will give you a clear and concise loan estimate. You will find out exactly how you can reduce your fees while getting the best interest rate possible. Call 836-5700. That's 836-5700. Or you can reach Indigo Mortgage on the web at indigomortgage.net. Indigo Mortgage, because nobody cares more about your mortgage loan. Brian Cochran, certified financial planner and the owner of John Moore Associates, in studio with us. We haven't talked about your Portland Trailblazers yet.
They're hanging in there. They're trying to stay out of that play-in tournament that's required.
What do you think's going on with all the injuries in the NBA? You think that has to do with the fact that the season just kind of ended like 60 days before the new one started?
Some people are blaming it on the more compressed schedule that they tried to squeeze together to get this season to happen. So they shortened the season a little bit, but they're also playing more games back-to-backs and such. And I think that could be a cause. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this isn't the topic, but a lot of the basketball heroes that we grew up with, and I'm a lot older than you, but a lot of them are starting to die. Mm-hmm. And as I think about their widows, I mean, you're talking about a lot of assets. And then at the end of the last segment, I thought about moms and how sweet they are and how generous they are. And sometimes, Brian, I can imagine that they want to give everything away before they even take care of themselves.
Yep. And we talked before the break about this internal desire to do something, to take action. And there's a lot of things that they might want to do that that widow might want to take action on. It could be buying a house or selling a house or investing a certain way or selling a certain investment. What we most often see is this, I mean, it's inexplainable desire to give everything away. So, you know, the husband and wife have been working together to build up a net worth over the years a lot of times, and the husband dies, and the wife, I don't know if she just feels that her time is then short, or what drives this? But there's this strong desire to start giving assets away. And that could be giving assets away to nonprofits. We see that a lot. Most frequently, it's, I want to start giving to the kids now. And so they want to turn on that faucet and start pouring money out to the children, ignoring the fact often that they may still have 5, 10, 15, 20 years, who knows how long to live, and still need those resources to care for their own needs. And so that's one of the things to really be on the lookout for. And if you're a child of a recent widow, I think the responsible thing to do, if you just lost your father or your uncle, or if you know this widow who's trying to give away money, is to say, you know, that's really generous of you, and I know you love and care for me. Right now, let's take care of you, and why don't we revisit this in 6 months or a year? Mm-hmm. What I often see is the kids are more than happy to, you know, put their hand out and accept these gifts, assuming that mom has plenty. But as an advisor, we look down the balance sheet, and we often see that, no, there's not enough that we can be giving away 20, 30, 50% of your estate at the loss of your husband. So it's a strange area, but I would say 8 or 9 times out of 10 when we serve widows, this is a component we're addressing. And we are huge, huge advocates of generosity. It's one of our key metrics of our business, is help, how much we help people give away. So I am by no means saying that being generous is a bad thing. But there is a point where you can give more than you can afford to give, and actually compromise your financial situation.
Listener question applies to this, emailed to me a couple of weeks ago. Listener says, are there creative ways to give away assets to your children while considering their different personalities? One is a spender, one is a saver. I am worried that one of my children will spend all the money very quickly.
A very common concern. And I have 2 sons. Great kids. I mean, I couldn't be happier with the way my sons are as young men, as boys. But I can tell you, I've got a spender and a saver in my house. So I understand where this question comes from. And the principle here is love them equally and treat them uniquely. Mm-hmm. That is such a key principle with children. And for whatever reason, moms especially feel this strong desire that fair is always equal. So you can love them equally, but that often requires that you treat them uniquely. So a couple principles we say with giving assets away to children. Sometimes if you have a spender, the best way to give assets is to ask, what do you think you'll use this money for? And if there's a specific need, rather than give them cash they may, you know, spend irresponsibly, say, why don't you send me that bill and I'll write a check? You know, if it's a medical bill or a tuition bill or a credit card bill, that way you know exactly where that money's going. That's a little bit of control you're exerting there, but I think it's responsible too. The other thing you can do is give smaller amounts first, and then ask them. I'd love to see how you know. Tell me how you use this. I'm just curious how this money blessed you. And so if you're inclined to give $5,000 or $2,000, cut that in half or cut it down to a third, and test them a little bit first, and kind of dip your toe in that giving water, if you will, and make sure that it's a good thing, because you know these gifts can be harmful at times if you're not careful.
I'm thinking long term. Brian, end of life planning, you've got a chunk of money and you have no doubt that one of your children may put it in a savings account, may worship God by giving generously part of it, will save and use that even for their own children. But then you have another child that has always been running on the edge economically and probably works hard and has great character, but again, just has this personality. Is there a way to give them the same amount of money, but make it so you almost protect the second child from themselves?
Yeah, and that's one of the great benefits of a trust. So people sometimes get intimidated by the word trust. They go, ooh, trust, that sounds like lawyers and expense. It doesn't have to be that expensive or complex. A trust is essentially a container with a set of rules, is the way I like to think of it. And any lawyers right now are probably just, you know, screaming at their radio saying, that's not what it is. But no, for simple purposes, that's the way we like to explain trust. So after you're gone, if you're worried about how your child might steward those assets, you can put in a trust and have a trustee stand between them and the money. And that trustee could be an individual. We often recommend corporate trustees that don't have an emotional attachment to the money or the beneficiary of the trust, which would be your child. Mm-hmm. And then you can put rules in there and says, you can take money for these things and these things alone. We had one client, I thought this was very creative. Their trust said that the distributions of the trust would be a match on any W-2 income or 1099 income earned by the beneficiary. So rather than just give the child a lump sum, they would say, well, if you go make $50,000 a year, the trust will send you another $50,000. Mm. So it was an incentive to go earn money. Because they were worried about a child who might just live off the trust and kick back and be that trust fund baby that none of us want our child to be. So a good attorney will not just take care of the legal and tax issues of a trust. They will ask about your family, and they will help you figure out what parameters make sense for your specific family members. But go back to that principle we talked about before. It doesn't have to be the same. Love them equally. Treat them uniquely. If you have radically different children, it doesn't really make sense that they would all receive the money in the same way.
Well, I think that that's true, but I think that it's kind of like an employer-employee relationship. When you negotiate a contract with one employee, they have a job, and they know how much they're going to get paid. And then you negotiate something different. This is even a biblical principle. And you say, look, I want to hire you to do this, and this is what I'm going to pay you. But then if those two employees talk, even though they were very happy when they negotiated the deal with you to start with, then there's grumblings because they perceive that they're being treated differently.
Yeah. And so I'd say the footnote to that principle is when you do this, you need to communicate it ahead of time. Mm. This should not be a surprise differentiation in treatment. And if there's going to be conflict, it's better to get it out on the table now. Rather than wait and let the kids fight over it later.
So let's say, Brian, that there's not a lot of assets that John Moore Associates is managing for a couple. One of the spouses die, but then there's a windfall of life insurance or some other thing. But they don't really have a plan. And again, they're having that panic because their spouse has died. How do they talk to you about risk aversion and, you know, what amount of risk they can take and where to put this money?
Yep. So that goes back to some of the core principles of financial planning. And when we look at someone who has any pile of money, pile is a very technical financial term. If you have an abundance of resources, a pile of resources, or maybe even a smaller collection of resources, how you manage that should be dictated by your goals. So if I'm sitting down with a widow, her goals could be quite different than they were 6 months ago before her husband died. So we might have to do a whole refresh of their financial plan, of her financial plan, now that she's gone from a we to a me, and say, okay, when your husband was alive, these are the things we were working toward. Has that changed? How has that changed? How would you redefine your goals now? One of those goals could be, I want to give half of it to the kids, you know, like we were just talking about. And then we can discuss whether or not that's prudent, and if so, how we're going to make it happen. But it requires a reset. And the risk you take on your investments should be a reflection of your goals. And a goal, financial goal, should have a timeline and a dollar amount. Mm-hmm. So your goal should say, okay, I want to buy a $200,000 vacation condo in 3 years. That's a goal. I want to go vacation somewhere is not a financial goal. Mm-hmm. But give me a timeline and a dollar amount. So it should be a combination of what do you want to accomplish and when, your financial goal, combined with your personality. You know, I can justify putting a lot of risk in for some clients who just in their personality cannot tolerate that risk. Mm-hmm. So now you've got new goals because you're a single person, and maybe the investments were a reflection of both your personalities, or more heavily your husband in some cases. Now we've got to reset everything because you've got different personality involved and a different goal. So it takes some thought. It's not as easy as just, oh, every widow should have this much risk. Well, every widow is going to have different amount of assets, different kinds of assets, different goals, different family needs. So it really requires the time to sit down. Now, here's the key, though. You don't have to do that 2 weeks after your husband dies or 2 months after. We often say we need to give you some breathing room here. Let's make sure your finances are structured such that you can pay your bills. But we insist that our widows wait 6 to 12 months before we really reset their financial plan, unless there's some kind of a dire need, like a debt that needs to be paid or something like a business that's in transition that requires our immediate attention. And that's so important. You have time. Take your time. Do this smart, because you're going to be in a fog for 6 to 12 months. The widows we work with, oftentimes I have to repeat myself every month or two when we meet with them for the first year, because they're not retaining anything one meeting to the next for that first 6 to 12 months. And that's okay. I'm not upset with them or impatient with them, because that's the nature of grieving. And so if you have an advisor that's forcing you to take action, that's pushing you to do something, that's a bad sign, because that's not in your best interest in almost all cases. So being patient, take your time, reset your goals, understand how much risk you're willing to take, which an advisor can help you through that. And now you're ready to make a decision about risk and reward.
Brian Cochran is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. He's also now the owner of John Moore Associates. What a neat legacy John Moore has left. And how many people working with you now, Brian?
There's 9 of us, and I've got job applications out right now and resumes. We're a growing firm, so we feel really fortunate.
I love that. Well, you can go to johnmoore.com for more information. We've got another half an hour with Brian. Hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back.
Be careful. This is Roger Patterson with a minute of Vision for Life. New York Giants defensive lineman Jason Pierre-Paul injured his hands during an Independence Day celebration in 2015. Pierre-Paul was playing with firecrackers. He lost an index finger and fractured his thumb. It was initially reported that this action may cost him some of his $15 million contract for the upcoming season. Further, there were concerns about his ability to play his position effectively, as so much of the combat in the trenches is done with your hands. As a parent, I often tell my children, be careful, because I know my kids can get injured by their own foolish decisions or by others who act carelessly. You know, our Heavenly Father also tells us to be careful and to do so by obtaining wisdom. Wisdom speaks as a person would in Proverbs 8:36 and states, but those who miss me injure themselves. Injuring yourself is probably the worst type of injury, because you know in your heart you could avoid it.
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Patterson with a minute of vision at visionforlife.org.
After a long season of fear and anxiety fueled by an endless stream of bad news, you're invited to experience still waters. Rest in the Lord's goodness and mercy as He restores our souls and calms our anxious hearts at the Sheology Spring Gathering, Restore, Calm My Anxious Heart. Saturday, May 1st, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the amphitheater at Calvary Church on Osuna in Albuquerque. Experience a full day of worship with special musical guest New Beginnings Choir. And an encouraging message from Lenya Heitzig.
You don't need another teaching. You don't need another book. You don't need another tape. You don't need another combo. What you need is to see God.
Plus a pop-up market, food trucks, photo booth, coffee and tea, tasty treats, and refreshing fellowship. Sheology's Spring Gathering. Restore. Calm my anxious heart. Tickets available now. Details at sheology.com.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Holly and Dave Slade and their team at Dave Slade and Associates Realtors are sponsors of the programming here on KNKT and our show, ABQ Connect. Call Holly or Dave at 342-8100 when you first start thinking about selling your home or buying a new one. Holly and Dave Slade at Dave Slade and Associates, doing business by the book, 342-8100, or reach them on the web at abqhomeseeker.com. That's 342-8100, Holly and Dave Slade at Dave Slade and Associates Realtors. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates in studio. Brian, you have so many resources available at johnmoore.com. You've got a webinar coming up we need to tell people about.
Yeah, so we're talking about widows today, and we're actually hosting a live webinar on May 6th. That's a Thursday. Thursday, May 6th at 5 o'clock. We have an expert on this topic. It's a woman named Miriam Neff. Miriam is the founder of a really wonderful nonprofit called Widow Connection. She's a strong Christian woman who lost her husband 15 years ago and really felt there was a need for wise counsel for these widows. So she, along with her daughter, who is a certified financial planner like myself, but also an attorney, so very bright young woman, they really pair up and create great resources. So she's going to be our guest speaker on this webinar. And you can register for this on johnmoore.com. Right on our homepage, you'll see a link to learn more about this webinar and register. There's no cost. And I'll really emphasize this. It is not a sales pitch for our firm. We love bringing these types of experts to the community to share their message. So it will not be something where you have to slug through a 30-minute sales pitch. We'll do a brief introduction and dive right into Miriam's comments, and you will be amazed. We'll also record that and put it on our website. But I encourage you to participate live, because we will have Q&A with Miriam. So if you know a widow, if you're helping serve a widow, if you are a widow, recent or long time, these principles Miriam will share will be very important to you.
And Brian, you've shared the inner workings of your company with us a little bit about the meetings you have with your staff and the webinars you do together to gain this expertise. So this is kind of you sharing the inner circle stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, and actually the way we found out about Miriam's ministry is we were at the national conference, which was hosted virtually, of course, this February, a couple months ago, and for Kingdom Advisors. So Kingdom Advisors is where we get a lot of our wonderful resources and education as an organization specifically designed to teach biblical principles to financial advisors. And one of the breakout sessions was Miriam with her daughter sharing some of these key principles. And we all agreed amongst our team, we've got to have her. And I wish she was delighted to partner with us to share this information.
I have a question from a listener that has to do with that pile of money we were talking about. And they actually said, and I changed it on our little list of topics today, but the question actually said, doesn't the Bible say that if you want the job done right, do it yourself? Now, I laugh because, of course, that's from the first book of Hesitations, not biblical. But that is something that people is ingrained in people. So talk to us a little bit about these self-investment tools and compare that to hiring a professional advisor.
What a great topic. And we could talk about this every month because I think it's so important. There are more tools now than ever for individual investors. I mean, by far, more tools, and I would add more information available. So you can self-educate very well in the areas of personal finance. And we meet people sometimes, and I honestly look at them and go, I don't know why you're in my office. You're doing everything right. And you seem to have a good head on your shoulders. And if that's the case, we will tell them. We'll say, you know, I think we can add some value here, but you're really off on the right foot. One of those people that came in like that, we actually ended up hiring. He's one of our advisors named Joe, who had been in another industry for 30 years. And he was so good at it. I said, you know, I think you should be doing that here with us. And he's a rock star. He's doing a great job with us. We love him. We really have a wonderful team across the board. Here's the problem with personal finance. If it was all just about the numbers and the tax law, that would be one thing. One thing that's unique about finances over some other areas where you can self-educate, like maybe fixing your car or fixing something in your home, or you can watch YouTube videos and figure out how to fix that washer and dryer. We've all experimented with that. There's a lot more emotion with money. And you can be very knowledgeable, but there's always a place for wisdom, which comes with experience and training. And there's always a place for having a third party, third person like myself, who comes into a relationship and is very objective and looks at your situation that doesn't have the emotion. Most of the big financial mistakes we see people make, it's not because they didn't know the tax law or they're uneducated in investments. It's because the emotion falls in. And as we're talking today about widows, what a perfect example of that, where you can have a very sharp woman who lost her spouse, but in this time of emotion, we can be led astray to make bad decisions.
So is it unreasonable for us not to worry women that are married, or women or men that are single? We are talking about widows today, but we need to talk to people today about getting a plan together. Mm-hmm. How do they select an advisor?
Yeah, that's a great thing. We could do a 2-hour segment on this alone. It's honestly not a bad place to start to simply ask other people you know, who do they work with and why? Don't just take the blind, why do you work with them? You know, oh, I work with them because the returns are good. I work with them because I trust them. I work with them because it's my son-in-law, you know, and I've got, you know, I'm a son-in-law, so I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but, you know, what makes you trust this person as your advisor? Because there's a lot of people out there that work with advisors for some of the wrong reasons. So a couple things I'd recommend is figure out, you know, what are you looking for in an advisor? Because different advisors perform different services. Financial advisor is unfortunately a rather vague term. Some financial advisors only sell products for commissions. If you know what you need to buy, and you just need someone to sell it to you, maybe that's okay. If you're looking for someone just to look at a couple problems real quick and give you a second opinion, that's maybe where an hourly rate financial planner would work well, or a project-based financial planner where they charge a flat fee and say, hey, okay, give me $2,000 and I'll look over this problem and I will give you an answer and you can walk away feeling more confident with your financial decisions. Or are you looking for someone to manage your assets on your behalf? So then you need someone who has a sophisticated investment process. That's different. Mm-hmm. So starting out, you need to ask yourself, well, what do I need? Where do I feel I'm falling short? And what do I hope to accomplish? And that'll start you off on the right foot And then you can start to look for an advisor that fits those needs. The second thing I'd look for is always try to work with an advisor that has to hold your best interests first. And we call that a fiduciary advisor. There's a lot of financial professionals out there that, believe it or not, there's no regulatory requirement to put your needs ahead of their own, which is baffling. And there's a lot of battles right now to make that more commonplace. So asking an advisor point blank, are you a fiduciary and are you always a fiduciary? What I mean by that, there's some advisors that jump between different business models, and sometimes they're fiduciary and sometimes they're selling you something that they don't have to be in your best interest. Those are two really good places to start. And then one question you should always be able to answer about your own advisor, and then as you're looking at new advisors, is how are you compensated? And then ask yourself, what behaviors and what motivations does that bring into this relationship? So if you have an advisor that's compensated 100% by commissions, okay, well, what does that incentivize? Well, it incentivizes transactions and sales. Mm-hmm. If you have an advisor that's paid on percentage of assets under management, that's how we're paid. We have an incentive to gather assets and manage everything. So we have to be careful not to let that incentive create bad decisions. So if a client, like the woman I talked about earlier, whose mom just passed away, we made the decision today to pay off a mortgage on a rental property. That's less assets under my management. It decreases the amount I'm paid. But my recommendation was, yeah, go do that because it's in your best interest to be reducing your debts as you're near retirement. So understand how are they paid and how, and then think about how does that motivate their behaviors in a way, and is that aligned with what I want them to be doing for me?
Yeah. Listener question. Is it fair to tell your advisor about your weaknesses to spend money and not save money and then expect them to hold you accountable?
I think that's a great role for a financial advisor, an accountability partner, if you will. What a great question. You get great listener questions, Jim. Yeah. I don't know how that happens, but you get these great questions. Yes, I think, and again, this goes back to what do you need from your advisor? We were just talking about that. Do you need someone to sell you something? Do you need, counsel? So you should be paying that advisor on an ongoing basis in some way to incentivize an ongoing relationship and not just buy a product from that advisor. But that's a piece we have to do, especially for our clients who are recently retired, that are now on a fixed income. Life looks different. Money looks different. We need to keep them on a spending plan that puts them on a sustainable course for the rest of their lives. It's true for every phase of our lives. We need to spend wisely, but that's a great role for an accountability partner. And that goes back to what I was saying before. That can be an emotional part of finance that an accountability partner can bring value.
It's dangerous not to seek advice from others in this situation, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is, absolutely. And you talked about the not so biblical principle. If you want something done, do it yourself. There's a biblical principle that plans often fail, but with many advisors, they succeed.
They succeed.
And there's a caveat there, especially for our widows that are out there trying to find the next best thing. One thing I've seen with some widows is they're seeking so much counsel from so many people that they end up with so many conflicting voices that they're not really getting closer to a decision. Mm. So we've had some times where a widow comes in and says, I know you said to do this, I talked to these five people and I got five different answers of what I should do. You need to settle on your one trusted contact. And if you suspect something that they're telling you is wrong, certainly go pursue affirmation, confirmation of their advice. But it makes it very difficult to make a decision when you have too many voices. So pick one person of counsel in each area. One person that's going to help you with your estate. One person that's going to help you with your investments. One person that will help you with your taxes. One person that will help you with your real estate decisions and so on. And if you want to bring a son or daughter that helps be an accountability or a support partner for you, great. But they should be asking more questions than anything. They shouldn't be telling you what to do. They should be supporting you in your interactions with those professionals.
You mentioned some essential steps that we should take when we're putting together a plan prior to a catastrophic event like passing away or something like that. One of those is that parents should tell their children, this is how I'm going to delegate assets to you. This is the process. You do that before. What are some of the other things that people should, consider in toward the end of life?
Yeah. So make sure that other decision makers understand your situation. So what I mean by that is, if I found out tomorrow that I had stage 4 cancer, I would be, very sure that my wife, Emily, knows everything she needs to know about our finances. Mm. Now, my wife, Emily, would then be turning to other people to help her. So the advisors on our team that would be helping her with her finances, our estate attorney, I would make sure that they're also up to date on my situation and everything that they need to know. And then make sure, you know, all those connections have been made. There's certain things that I run in our household. There's certain things my wife runs in our household. And if something was, if she was the one that was ill, I'd need to know a lot about how she's doing things around the house. We've delegated amongst, you know, between the two of us a lot of things. So communication, you know, getting everybody up to speed. It's amazing how much we see that's mistakes. It's just no one said anything about this. No one knew about this asset. No one knew that this is the way this was handled. I've worked with many widows where the husband passed away. And when a spouse passes away, you lose the smaller of the two Social Security incomes. So you're probably getting a pay cut. But I've also seen where a spouse loses $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year as a pension income that they never knew was going to go away. Mm. So now they just lost, let's say, $15,000, $20,000 a year in Social Security, $80,000 a year in pension. They just got a $100,000 a year pay cut. Can you imagine that feeling as a widow? You're grieving the loss of your spouse, and now you've got $100,000 less income. And you don't know if you can stay in your home anymore because it may not be affordable. I've seen that more than once. That's lack of communication. And that's irresponsible on this part of the husband who was managing the finances. And that could be the other way around. It could be the wife that's managing the money. So communicate, you know, make sure everything's clear. And then make sure everything's documented and shared in a place where it's accessible. So is it in a safe? Is it in an electronic file with a password? How will people get to those key documents? So, you know, how's everything structured? And then how do I access it when the time comes? Those are two real key parts that we see fall short on a regular basis.
Brian, I know that you frequently work with accountants, attorneys, as part of this financial team that you talked about in our first segment. But I'm going to reword something when we come back from the break that I wrote down. And that's, is it a red flag when an advisor doesn't want to work with any of these other people? We'll be back with Brian Cochran. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Hi, I'm Todd Nettleton, and this is the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Sriva and her husband were living with her husband's parents in Nepal, but the elderly couple was unhappy Sriva attended church. One day while her husband was away at work, his parents grabbed Sriva's Bible and began beating her with it. They ordered her to leave their home immediately and never return unless she renounced her faith in Christ. Sriva refused. She and her husband now live with friends, and though they are in transition, she is grateful that her husband accepted Jesus Christ. Pray they will continue to build their lives on God's word while working to build a home of their own.
I will not let my brothers and sisters suffer in silence, nor will I let them serve alone. To join me in prayer for the persecuted Christians, go to vomradio.net.
So how is your stress level on a scale of 1 to 10? Stress is a thief, a robber of peace and joy. Here's Skip Heitzig with a pointed observation.
If you don't live with an anchor of faith, you're going to drift in a sea of anxiety. And most people in the world, they don't have anything to anchor. They have no real grand scheme or purpose in life.
We want to help you live with an anchor of faith so you can learn to lean into God in times of anxiety by sending you three powerful resources. Skip Heitzig's new booklet, Overcoming an Anxious Mind. His teaching, Worship in the Uncertainty on CD. Plus, the War is Over Worship CD. This bundle is our thanks when you give $35 or more today to help expand the Bible teaching outreach of Skip Heitzig.
Jesus as Savior brings peace with God, but Jesus as Lord brings the peace of God.
Call now to request these three encouraging resources when you give 800-922-1888 or give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are talking about widows and financial planning, and obviously that has to happen before you are a widow, and it could apply both to men and women, widowers or widows. Brian, I want to go back to this getting advice from too many voices. You really do have to have a team, and I know that you frequently mention that you work closely with accountants and attorneys, but when you were talking earlier about selecting an advisor, I know people that they just want to do everything themselves, and they actually don't want accountability with those other people.
Yeah, and that's a concern to me. If you as the client say, hey, I've got this CPA I want to work with or I already work with, and they don't want to share information, if your financial advisor doesn't want to share information with that person or collaborate, I can't see a good reason to do that unless they say, oh, I've worked with that professional. That person is not who they say they are. There's an issue there, or it's just not the right person for you. That's different. But an unwillingness to collaborate is a huge red flag for me, because honestly, in our team, when we get a call from an attorney or a CPA says, hey, I want to share this with you, or I want to run this by, we're ecstatic. We love it, because we know it's going to be better for the client. It takes the client out of the middle of having to try to translate financial speak amongst different professionals. And in fact, we often meet with clients in the same room at the same time with the CPA, the attorney, the advisor, and the client all at once. Just a couple weeks ago in our building, one of our theoretical competitors is upstairs from us. And I had a client says, I'm going to meet with this advisor and talk to him about this. Can I bring what I learned from him to you and get a second opinion? I said, heck, why don't you just catch me on the way up the elevator and we'll go meet together. And the three of us had a wonderful meeting. So we're supposed to be at each other's throats, theoretically, as competitors. Great guy, great advisor, giving wise counsel. He just served a little bit different vein of the financial world than we do. And we had a great time. So if someone's intimidated or doesn't want that other advisor in the relationship, I would be very concerned.
Well, let me ask you maybe about a client that may not have an attorney and some other things. And I think that was the gist of this listener question. Should I talk with my accountant or John Moore Associates to find ways to reduce my tax liability as I invest for retirement?
So if it's specific to investments and the plans of your investments, a good investment advisor, and certainly the advisors on our team, would be trained to address that and say, okay, there's ways we can save with giving strategies, saving strategies, different IRA structures, things like that. That's within our purview. When you have something like if you're a small business owner or you're going through an estate transaction, that's a good example of where you might want to have a joint meeting with your financial advisor and the CPA and share ideas together. So bring them together and say, okay, I don't know what I should do. All I know is I'm tired of paying this much tax. Is there an opportunity here? And then everybody can put their heads together.
Want you to talk to us a little bit about some more resources available at johnmoore.com. You've written two books with your mentor, John Moore, The Almighty and the Dollar, A Lifestyle of Generosity, and In Succession, which you've just applied to your own life, A Step-by-Step Journey for Continuity.
Yep. So the first book, The Almighty and the Dollar, is really for individuals and really ideally for couples a lot of times who want to just sort of learn. It's not so much the how on finance. It's not going to say this is how much you should put in your IRA, or because that's so individual. But it's a lot about the why. You know, how do you get to making decisions? And why would you save? Why do you reduce debts? Why do you need to communicate as a couple? It's a lot of that, and it's all kind of through the biblical lens that we see the world. And the folks who've read it and given us feedback really find it to be a helpful resource. We intentionally made it bite-sized. You know, it's not so much that you feel like you've got a degree at the end of it, but it's enough to trigger good questions, hopefully instill good conversations in a couple, and get you on the right path with the way you think about money.
How have the investment markets been the last couple weeks since we've seen you?
I've been pretty good since we last talked. Still very low volatility. That's probably the biggest thing we've been talking about with clients. That never seems to last. You know, in the movies, they always have that dramatic scene where they say, oh, it's quiet. And the other guy says, too quiet. You know, and you know something's about to happen. That's how this feels to us right now, is after such a volatile year last year with COVID concerns and the economic shutdown, volatility has really been quiet the last month or so. So to remind listeners, when you're investing in stocks, normal volatility suggests that you get a 10 to 15% drop in the markets every 12 to 18 months. That doesn't mean you shouldn't invest. That's just what you should expect when you invest, which means every new dollar you put in, it's very likely that it'll be worth less at some point in the next year. Now the market bounced back from those 10 to 15% drops and moves forward historically. So we're getting close to a year since that last 10% drop, and it kind of makes us look around and go, okay, when's the next one coming?
Well, heck, it was more than 10%. I think you told us we lost 30% in the market in March of last year. And the crazy thing was the firestorm of recovery that happened even during COVID before the vaccines were available.
Yep. And there's always risk around the corner. Where we get concerned with markets and investors is when we hear nobody talking about risk, that's where you start to get concerned, because when everyone becomes complacent and ready for more risk, that's when the volatility often shows up.
Give us an example of risk adversity. Mm-hmm. You're in one situation, so you don't have very much tolerance for risk, and then you're in a different situation and you may have more. Contrast those for us.
Yeah. First off, when we talk about risk, what probably the better word is volatility. Mm-hmm. What's your tolerance for volatility? Because risk can be construed something different. Let me give an example real quick. Someone came in the other day and we were talking about investing. This was a husband wife that's managed our money very separately, which is not my favorite thing. But the wife was saying, well, I don't want risk. I said, well, how do you define risk? Because I don't want this portion of my assets that's going to my children to go to zero. I said, well, that's risk. But how much volatility are you willing, you know, how much can the prices move up and down throughout the rest of your life versus go to zero? Because a well-diversified portfolio, the probability of it going to zero is very, very, very low. Okay. If you just buy all in one stock, yeah, okay, maybe that company fails. So if you're thinking about risk in terms of I lose all my money, like the risk of going to the blackjack table and putting a bet down, there's a good chance you're going to lose all your money. That's real risk. What we're talking about here is price volatility. And what we see is in different ages and stages and different life circumstances, like today with widows, husband or wife passes away, you know, you've got a surviving spouse, all of a sudden their tolerance for that volatility may decline because they feel more worried about what their money means in the short term. And they don't want to see it to go down 10, 15, 20, 30% in the short term, which happens in stock markets periodically. So that's where we look at volatility and say, okay, how much volatility are you willing to ride along? Because the problem is volatility is not too big of a problem because it traditionally has bounced back. The problem is if it's so much volatility that causes you to make a bad decision and sell at the bottom, now you've got a problem because now you've taken volatility and turned it into action at a bad time, and now you've locked in a loss, and now there is risk. Now you've actually incurred a downside.
I know you've offered to us in past shows that if you take the last 60 years and take any 20-year slice of it, it's always been positive. Mm-hmm. You can take any 20-year slice, and I found that to be an amazing statistic.
Yeah, and that's where markets are different than gambling. You go to a casino and you sit down at a craps table, a blackjack table, or at a slot machine. People say, oh, the market's just gambling. Well, the longer you stay at the casino, the more likely you are to have nothing. The longer you stay in the markets, the more likely you are to have a positive return.
I think that's funny. Brian, one more time, you have a webinar coming up on May 6th. Tell us one more time about it.
So again, this is the topic of our webinar will be all about widows. Miriam Neff will be our guest speaker from Widow Connection. She runs a wonderful ministry for widows. So this is Thursday, May 6th, 5:00. It'll be a live webinar with Q&A. No sales pitch, just good information, and you can register on our website, johnmoore.com. A lot of good topics to be discussed for widows. So if you're helping a widow, if you are a widow, if you know a widow and you want to share that link, please do, and we'd love to have you.
And in addition to the other resources we've already mentioned, webinars, ABQ Connect post, you can see this or listen to this show on abqconnect.online. We'll be posting that here in the next 24 hours or so. And Brian, how do people reach out to you if they, or your team, if they needed more information?
Jump on the website, johnmoore.com. You'll see a contact us section at the top right, or just give our office a call, 505-881-5100, 5100.
Are you optimistic for the rest of the year?
I am. I think we will see volatility at some point, but with the forecast for earnings and such this year, I think the economy will be in a recovery mode for the foreseeable future until the Federal Reserve says they've had enough.
Are small things like gas prices alarming investors?
Not so much. We've been benefiting from very low fuel prices for quite some time. You know, oil sitting around $60 a barrel is not restrictive to the economy. What's more concerning is there's a significant imbalance right now in the labor markets that could drive more inflation. You've got 7.5 million job openings in the country right now. Mm. And about 9 million people that were working last year that aren't now, but they're not looking for work because they don't have to because the stimulus checks are coming in. So I saw a great picture that someone sent me just before I came in here. It was a Sonic billboard that said, we're sending stimulus checks out every two weeks, inquire within. They're trying to get people to come in and work. So.
I love it. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, God bless you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Steve.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosque Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosque Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.